All right. So my first guest, official guest on the podcast, is somebody that I've known for a long time, my dad.
Yeah.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
And I promised him we wouldn't give him like any hard-hitting questions, so we'll try to stay away from that. Right. What happened with you and mom with the divorce? Can we talk about it? I'm just joking. Yeah. My mom. I call her mom still.
Okay.
He's nervous that I'm going to make him cry because he can get emotional. So I'll try. If he ends up crying, we'll just cut it out.
No, I think this is one you're going to make the highlight. Just me crying. I know you.
So now you're going to try to cry?
No, for sure. Okay. I'll try my best.
So I wanted to have you on because in the last episode, you haven't got a chance to listen to it yet. But me, Packy, and I talked about you a little bit and about, you know, how you grew up in Cape Verde and then moved to the United States. So I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about that and kind of just get a perspective of somebody that, you know, how old are you when you moved to the United States?
14. I celebrated my 15th birthday 2 months after I arrived.
And you went right to Brockton High School.
I went to Brockton High School, didn't speak a word of English.
So some of you listening that aren't from Massachusetts don't know Brockton High School. Like the state of Brockton High School right now, it's so dangerous. They need the National Guard. So how was it back then?
Brockton High back then was the largest high school west of the Mississippi.
Wow. Yeah. So you walked in.
Sorry, east of the Mississippi.
East of the Mississippi. So you walked in and couldn't speak any English at all. Nope. Foreign exchange student.
We had to go to a special program where they teach you. Actually, I have a funny story about that.
Let's hear it.
They teach you how to speak English.
Right.
So we had classes all in Portuguese.
Yeah.
Because that's the official language of Cape Verde is Portuguese. And then we had one class where you went in to learn how to speak English. So the funny story was there's a word in Portuguese which is sympathy. Simpático is means you're outgoing, you're friendly.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember going to my English class. Barbara Smith was my teacher. She was really a great teacher, really sweet, nice person. Now envision this: I'm 15 years old. So it's her birthday. So I figure I have to buy her a card and bring it to class. So I go to CVS, whatever it was, Walgreens back then, and I'm looking around. I don't speak English, so I need to buy a card for Barbara Smith.
Yeah.
So I bought a sympathy card.
Like somebody passed away or something?
But I'm thinking sympathy. It's friendly. It's funny.
Right.
So I get all excited. I come to class. There's got to be 20 kids in the classroom. I said, oh, Miss, I buy you a card.
Yeah.
She opens it up. She's laughing her ass off.
Well, she must have understood. Obviously,
sympathy
she's
card.
A teacher.
You know, yeah. I'm giving her a sympathy card. She's going to think this kid is weird. But she thought, and I had to explain to her what simpatico mean in Portuguese. So pretty funny.
So when you go to Brockton High, you're a foreign exchange student. You're learning the language. Yep. You, brand new country. Yep. Were you nervous? Were you embarrassed? How did you feel?
It was weird because they literally, I think it was 25 kids in one classroom, all mixed in. And then I wanted to get out. I literally wanted to get out and start learning how to speak English.
Right.
So to do that, I had 3 TVs in my bedroom.
Yeah.
So I would watch 3 TV stations at the same time to try to learn English as quickly as I could.
Was there a certain show that you'd watch more than others, like Gilligan's Island or something?
Three Stooges? Sesame Street.
Okay.
15 watching Sesame Street.
There you go.
Elmo.
And do you think that helped you?
Of course.
Yeah.
I wanted to get out of that class so bad. So it took me 2 years. I was all 100% English.
So let's rewind a little bit. Prior to that, you're living in the Cape Verde Islands. And on the last episode, I explained to people that up until 1975, it was a Portuguese colony. Once Cape Verde gained its independence, a lot of people of Portuguese descent either went back to Portugal or came to the United States.
No, basically what happened was you had, Cape Verde is a very mix of people. You have Irish, you have Jewish, you have people from Portugal, you have people from Africa, you have people from literally all over the world. So it was literally a fear that something was going to happen to us if we stayed in the country, because Portuguese own all these other colonies like Angola, Mozambique, Macau, Timor, Guinea-Bissau, all these different countries. And Angola a lot of the people that owned properties were getting killed.
Mm.
So the fear was, when my dad and my mom was, is this going to come to Cape Verde also?
So in, when you're saying when Angola gained its independence.
Prior to. Yeah.
So what do you know what year Angola gained its independence? Was it around the same time?
I think it was either the late 75 or early 76.
So what did Portugal just get rid of their colonies all at once?
It was Revolution Portugal. Portugal prior to 1975 was a dictatorship.
Mm.
So basically a new government came in and just basically said, we're done. There was civil war going on in those countries.
Right.
Constantly. So they made the decision to just let's give them all independence and be done with it.
Okay. And so when you're growing up in the Cape Verde Islands, and I told people in the last episode too, you grew up on the smallest island out of all of them. It was like almost like a dot on the map.
That's 10 islands in the archipelago of Cape Verde. I lived in the smallest island. The majority of the Portuguese people lived in Brava,
okay,
which is the smallest island.
Right.
Back then when I lived there, it was probably the population of about 12,000 people.
So growing up there, like as you got older, like let's just call it a couple of years before you came to the United States, what did you know about the United States? Did you know anything about it at all? Like what was it?
My grandmother lived here.
Yeah.
She immigrated to the United States back in 61, the year I was born.
Yeah.
So
is this mom's mom or dad's
my
mom?
My mom's mom.
Okay.
Yeah, so we'd keep in touch with her. My mom would keep in touch with her. She would send gifts to us, you know, at least once every 6 months.
Were you getting any media from the United States, like TV radio?
So
nothing.
Basically, I think when I was probably 10 is the first time I saw a TV screen.
So was your perception of the United States like it was this great country?
Great country. Literally, we had a lot of cousins that lived here. They had immigrated here in 66. My grandmother in 61. So we just wanted to come and be with our family.
So when you got the news, right? You're 14.
14 years
old. You get the news, we're moving. Are you excited or are you sad?
It's both at the same time.
Yeah.
But what happened was overnight, don't forget, Independence 75, July of 75, literally overnight, half the population left.
Right.
So we're going from 12,000 people to 6,000 people.
Right.
So we want to get out. So we want to come to the United States.
All right. So I know, I mean, I've been with you to Cape Verde, so I know about the boat ride from Brava to Fogo. What was it like back then?
You really didn't think about it.
We
think about it more right now. So forget, I never left the island until I was 14. That was the first time I got on a boat and left the island.
So you had never even been to the other islands?
No, this is the first time I'm leaving the island.
Yeah, 14
years old. Yeah.
So
my mom had already left. My mom and my three siblings had already left. So my dad, my sister, one of my older brothers, and my dad would stay behind.
Now, was that because you guys couldn't afford to all go at once?
Yeah, it was a tough time. I mean, my dad, you know, worked for the government, so his salary wasn't that great.
Right.
And so there was 9 of us that had to buy tickets to the Anna Island. You had to buy flights to Lisbon, and then you had to flights to the United States. So it was pretty expensive.
So I know now, and we know, and people from Massachusetts in this general area know now that the Cape Verdean population in this part of the United States is huge. What was it like back then? I can imagine that there wasn't a lot of Cape Verdeans in Brockton because were people immigrating at rates
We were the first ones to arrive. I think it was, you know, the population has already grown. Brockton, probably the population right now is about 100,000. Probably, I would say 70% of the population right now is Cape Verdean in the Brockton area.
But when you guys came, there was
very, very small. Probably 5,000 people.
Wow.
Yeah.
So if now I'm gonna put a scenario in your head.
Yep.
Antonio Nelson Varela.
Yep.
Freshman year, Brockton High. If you could go back and tell him something, what would you tell him?
Study some more. Yep. Yep. Focus more.
So I mean, how old were you when you got into the jewelry business?
22.
So by you telling your younger self, study some more, would you have gone into a different field if you had studied more?
I wanted to become an interpreter.
Okay.
I went to work for the UN, and you know, as you know, I speak Creole, I speak Portuguese, I speak Spanish.
Little French.
I speak a little French. So that's basically what I wanted to do. I wanted to speak as many languages as I could.
Okay.
So that's what I wanted to do.
What do they call that?
Trilingual. Well, yeah, I think it's...
There's a name for it, but it's like you need to speak more than five or something like that. And so did you ever think that like one day you'd grow up and you'd have a son that's an asshole or...
No, I've always dreamt about having a son. That was my dream since I was a kid.
Right.
So when you were born, it was the happiest day of my life.
So you lost, and I don't want to get the waterworks going, but you lost your dad at a young age. You were 20 years old, right?
I was 21.
21.
My dad passed away.
Okay. Yeah. And so...
Not easy.
No, I mean, I can't imagine. Yeah. I'd be... Yeah. God knows where I would be without you.
My dad was just such a... great human being. You're not gonna make me cry. I'm gonna try my best not to do it.
Okay.
My dad was orphaned when he was very young.
Yeah.
I think he was 10 years old when he lost both his parents.
Yeah.
So he lived in an orphanage.
So his parents died when he was
very
10.
Young. Okay. Yeah. 10 years old, I think. So he lived in an orphanage in the 40s in Lisbon, Portugal.
Right.
With his middle brother.
Right.
And so. But he was very strict, but very loving at the same time. We respect him a great deal.
Right.
So him passing, he was very young. He's my age.
Right.
I mean, I'm 62 right now. So my dad was 62 when he passed away.
Wow. Wow.
Was it easy?
No, I mean, I can't imagine. I would have loved to, I think about, because both my grandfathers were passed before I was born. I would have loved to have met either of them. That would have been really cool. But now here we are, I have a son and you get to spend time with him, you get to interact with him and it's great. And so you, obviously you come to the United States, you want to date women. So how, you know, did you start, how old are you when you started like really dating? I'm sure you had to learn the language first or.
I think at first I dated a lot of women that speak my own language.
Right.
You know, the community, literally the whole community moved in the United States.
Right.
So I think my first true girlfriend was Cape Verdean also.
Okay.
And then I dated someone when I was 18. Yeah, she was American. So I was already speaking English proficiently. Right. So I was doing pretty good.
So you are, out of all your brothers and sisters, you were the only one to marry outside of the Portuguese sort of ethnicity, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, did you get shit for that from your family?
No,
or they were
love your
cool
mom.
With it?
They love your mom. Okay. Yeah. So there was, everybody loved your mom. It's
so there was no pressure to make sure you marry a Portuguese woman. It wasn't really like
No, not in our family. No.
So when you're 21 when your dad passes away, now did you look up to any of your brothers as sort of, did they take on the role of a father figure, someone to look up to, someone to go to when you're, you know, having a tough time or anything like that? Was it?
My older brother, Helder.
Helder.
Is the person that really was, he's the oldest one in the family.
Right.
And he guided the whole family. We looked up to him, well-educated, smart.
What's the age gap between you and Helder?
I think 10 years old. He's 72.
So he was, when that happened, he was like 30, 31 years old.
Yeah.
Now, was he teaching already
he
at that
already
point?
Teaching, yeah.
Already
yeah,
a teacher. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Teaching. And now he's retired, but he works for you at the store.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Nice. And now he looks up to me.
Right.
So.
Right.
Tables turn.
Tables do turn.
Yeah.
Tables do turn. So another.
I yell at him just like you used to yell at me when I was younger.
It must feel good.
Yeah. I don't yell at him. Like, you know, I'm very driven.
Right.
In my business. So I tried to be successful. I've been successful. And so he looks up to me.
So
it's a good feeling.
You've been in the jewelry business for...
42 years.
42 years. You're not sick of it? You have your days?
I love my clients. I love my customers. I try to do the best I can do in my business.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to be honest, upfront. Especially being in the jewelry business, you have to be straightforward with it, what you do. So
I know we've talked about in the past, you sort of want to step away from the retail side and kind of move it, maybe one day move it another direction where you kind of just have an office at the jeweler's building and you're doing appointment only for customers that want to buy engagement rings or whatever they want to buy, but just kind of do your own thing, appointment only.
Yeah, that's my plan. So working on that right now, looking at, you know, I have a very big business. We've been around for 53 years in the Brockton area.
Yeah.
So the goal is to bring someone up into the business to kind of run it for me and then oversee it from far away or come in once in a while and then have a private office in Boston. That's the plan. Yep.
Do you ever get customers that come in that follow me on social media? Like, oh, yes, son.
Daily.
Daily.
Yeah,
nice.
Daily.
Yeah, it must feel good.
Yeah.
They must feel good.
Yeah, they see the shirts. Of course, I wear your shirt all the time. So
And so, you know, most of my followers know about my struggles in the past, you know, with addiction and just behavioral stuff and always getting in trouble. If there's any parents that are listening that are dealing with that sort of thing, what advice would you give them?
Don't give up.
Don't give up.
Don't give up. I think a lot of parents just throw their hands up in the air. You're 18 years old, do your own thing. As you know, how old are you now? 35? 34. Hey, you're going to be 35 this year.
Yeah. Let's not. The world doesn't
Don't give up. I mean, I haven't given up on you. And I call you, what, maybe 4 times a day?
Now that I've sort of turned a corner and things have. But for a while, your approach was sort of like the tough love. And I knew that. Yeah. I knew that you weren't necessarily giving up on me. But, you know. It's crazy how now that I have a son and he's starting to get older, even though he is very well behaved and I don't have to have those fears yet, but I sort of am able to look back and put myself in your shoes and kind of go, oh God, what a friggin'.
I think what I do is a lot of times, sometimes I'll lay in bed thinking about it. I think when I got married, I was very young. I was 25. I think your mom was 23. And you know, having children doesn't come with a instruction. This is how you raise children. This is what you do. So it wasn't easy. You know, we were doing very well financially.
Right.
We had a big home. We had parties all the time at the house. We traveled a lot.
Right.
And you forget the responsibility you have as a parent. You brought these kids in this world. This is your responsibility.
Right.
So if I had to go back, I think I would done it differently. I think I would do it more like you do, spend a lot of time, quality time with you and Lauren, like you do with Ben. Sometimes I'm actually jealous of you a little bit because I see how much time you spend with Ben, how you always at his basketball games, you play basketball. I remember coming home from work, exhausted, and you would say to me, Dad, let's play some basketball. Oh, I'm too tired.
Yeah, that's easy to say, but I also don't live the same life that you lived because when you were my age, you were putting in hours and hours and 60, hours. Your whole life was work, and your whole life was work not so you could be rich and do whatever you want. Your whole life was work so you could provide for us. And I don't think I understood that as a kid, but now as an adult and I know how bills and taxes and all that shit works, I understand it. You know what I mean? So, you know, I don't know if I would be the same dad I would be if I was, you know, working as hard as you worked. You know,
My take on it, I think you should wait longer to get married. I think when you get married young, it's very tough. If I had to do it over again, I would wait until I was in my 30s to get married. And, you know, travel a little bit more, see the world a little more.
But then?
Go out with the friends as much as I could. And then once you get married, just focus on your family, focus on your life, focus on your wife.
Right.
That's what I would do if I do it over again.
All right. But then I wouldn't have been born, so.
Then you would,
And the world would. Yeah.
You would be 20 years old right now.
No, that's not how it works. That's not how it works. I just wouldn't have been born. You would have had a different son.
Yeah, well. It is what it is.
So I was thinking the other day about going to pulling the trigger and going to Turkey and getting the hair transplant. What do you think?
Man, I'm not sure about that.
You did a good job of embracing
your ball. No, the key is you have to feel good about who you are. I am the happiest person because I like Tony Varela.
Right.
I like me.
Yeah.
I don't find anybody better than me. I don't think Elon Musk is better than me. I don't think Jeff Bezos is better than me. I like the money that I make.
Yeah.
That's the money I live with.
Right.
I don't envy anybody else. I like the car that I drive. That's the car that I enjoy driving.
I think if your head was as big as mine, you might.
No, I like who I am. I remember growing up, and I started losing my hair when I was probably 18 years old, which was devastating.
Right.
But as I got older, I think my 30s, I said, who cares?
Screw it.
Yeah, screw it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I started losing it when I was like in my mid-20s, when I started to notice it. And it's
I think your issue is women.
Okay.
I think you have this thing that women look at you differently because you don't have hair.
That's...
But who cares? If the woman doesn't like you because you don't have hair, that's not the woman you want.
Right.
So, and I don't think women like men because they don't have hair. That's a young girl and they're 17, 18 years old looking at it. Mm. I think a woman that's mature will look at you and say, this guy is a great guy. He's funny. I think the greatest thing a woman looks at is being funny.
Right.
Sense of humor.
Yeah.
And then you're clean cut. You take good care of them.
Yes.
You respect them.
Correct.
I think those are the key things
now,
that a woman,
imagine all those things you just named with hair.
I'm telling you right now. No. I think if you poll all the women in your audience, you should do a poll, and you say sense of humor, takes good care of her woman, or takes good care of his children, hair would be last on the list. I don't think hair is number one.
Yeah. I'll do the poll.
Yeah.
I'll do the poll. We'll see.
Guarantee you, it'll be sense of humor be number one.
Right.
It'll be 70%. Do you agree, Josh? I think you can see. Thumbs up.
The guy with hair in the corner. Yeah. Pick your head, Josh, and then tell me how you feel. Okay. Try it out for a week. So you know, I wanted to go back to
my arrival in the United States.
Yeah, no, we can go back to that. So I mean,
So don't forget, I arrived here in the 70s when there was disco.
Right.
So we have bell-bottom pants,
yeah,
shiny shirts. I mean, you've seen some of the pictures of me.
And what was your what was your first day of school outfit?
Oh, stop it.
What do you mean? No, it's a good story. It's a good story.
So, no, I have a good story. Actually, I remember clearly when I arrived in Lisbon from Cape Verde Island. Now, don't forget, I have never left the island. So our dress code is different. We don't even know the dress code around the world, what people are wearing. Because we don't have TV.
Just having clothes, period,
yeah,
was
that's
a
all
win.
We have a clothes.
Yeah.
So I arrive in Lisbon, and my dad is so proud to take me around, show me around Lisbon. So we walk, and me and him, in the most beautiful avenue in Portugal. It's called Avenida Liberdade in Portugal.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember clearly what I was wearing to this day. I have never forgotten. It's been, how many years? 40?
50.
50 years.
Yeah.
Wow. So I was wearing... I don't know if it was the pink one or the yellow one, but you know a tablecloth, you have the lines, the gray and the yellow and the... So
plaid.
Plaid. Yeah. Very plaidy.
Yeah.
So my older brother, Carlos, had given me a set of pants that he had made from the tailor.
Yeah.
And one was pink, not hot pink, but kind of light pink with gray lines. The other one was like this bright yellow with lines.
Mm-hmm.
So I took those two pants, I made them to fit me, and those are the two or three pants that I brought with me to the United States.
Right.
So I arrive in Lisbon. Me and my dad are walking. My dad's showing me this place here is the museum of this. This is the museum of that. This is the where the ambassador lives of Spain, blah, blah, blah.
So for people listening, when you left Cape Verde, you guys made a pit stop in Lisbon, Portugal.
For 6 months.
So this must have been... Your eyes wide
open.
Every
move you make. So I'm going from one island. Yep. I leave Brava to Fogo. So Brava at the time, I think, had 20 cars total.
Mm-hmm.
So arriving Fogo, they probably had 150 cars.
Right.
So your eyes just brightens up.
Yeah.
And then we're arriving in the capital city. They have thousands of cars. They have red lights, which I never seen before. You know, first time I ever seen lights in on the streets. And then we leave... Cape Verde, we're arriving in Lisbon, Portugal, which is a major European city.
Right.
So it's just like overnight, your mind is just blown away. It's just like, can't believe it.
Right.
So the story was, me and my dad are walking this famous avenue in Lisbon. So I see these two kids about a quarter of a mile to a half mile away coming towards us. And one of the kids is kind of rolling on the cement, you know, on the sidewalk. And I'm like, what's he doing? Why is he doing that? And he's pointing. But I'm thinking he's pointing at something else. And the closer we get, the closer he's pointing more towards my penis. So to this day, I remember that it was just so sad. And then, so I come to you.
Well, it probably sticks with you because it made you feel like shit.
Of course it does. Yeah. I'm 14 years old.
Right.
So then I come home. I tell my mom. I said, Mom, you know, when I was in Lisbon, you know, as soon as I arrived, I think it was the day I arrived, I told the story. Don't forget, my mom was in, like, in her 40s.
Right.
You know, so she says, don't worry about it. Don't be so upset. I got some nice clothes for you to wear at school next week. I said, oh, that's nice, Mom. So she gets me a sweater. I'm 14 years old. The sweater says A, B, C, D, E. And it has a big flower in the middle. So that's the first shirt, the first sweater I wore to school when I'm 14 years old, the first day of school.
Right.
That sweater. A, B, C, D, E, F. Oh, God.
But when you got the shirt, you were like, there's a shirt with letters on it. You're thinking, this is great.
Yeah, it's embarrassing.
Right.
Think about it.
Right.
You're wearing that shirt to school when you're 14 years old.
Yeah, I don't know. I couldn't tell you what I wore my first day. Yeah.
So that's the shock of moving to a new country.
Right.
But it's been great. I've been here 48 years. Love the United States. Love what's done for me and my family.
And so you move to the United States. You start working at the jewelry store. You marry mom. You have kids. When do you start going back to Cape Verde to visit?
So it takes Cape Verde a good 10 to 15 years to get back on track. We're literally afraid of going back.
Right.
We're busy here in the United States, doing things, learning, working. So it takes me a good, I think, 15 years before I go back again.
So you're like 30 years old before you went back?
28, I think 28.
So yeah. When you go back for the first time, was it a cool feeling to be back home?
It was one of those, you know me, I cried at the drop of a hat.
Yeah.
So arriving back, it was just, and I remember the lady that I grew up with, she's still alive.
Yeah.
And she was this old Jewish lady that lived across from my house. We literally lived at her house.
Right.
I was there almost every day. I would see her. She was like in her 80s, almost 90.
And so you go back, and obviously the poverty in Cape Verde is like severe.
Well, the poverty in Cape Verde is different. It's poverty that you don't see. It's not like you see in the, you know, in the films you see in Africa, people on, you know, in these desolate fields, you know, with wind blowing and they just in no clothes. It's a different type of poverty. It's a hidden poverty.
Mm.
People live at home. They barely has a roof on top of. They might have a meal in the morning, coffee and a piece of bread. They might have another piece of bread and coffee for lunch.
Right.
And they might have a little rice and fish at night. That's all they eat the whole, every day, 7 days a week, you know, 30 days out of the month.
So when did you start, like, really helping people over there?
I've always done that. I think from your first trip back,
like, oh, yeah,
it's just seeing what needs to be done and... it just pulls at you. It just, you know, I live in the greatest country in the world, and with people drive, you know, $300,000 cars and live in multi-million dollar homes, and these people have absolutely nothing. So,
right. So, and you were kind of for a while doing your own thing, kind of helping out who you could help out, especially people in Brava, because that's who you grew up. And then, you know, I had been doing this social media thing the last 2 years. And I think it was around last year, I said, why don't we start a charity, you and I?
I think I bugged you for a long time about it.
I don't think you bugged me for a long time. I think it was when you put the idea in my head, it was sort of like, well, I mean, I have all these followers.
I started the charity with a group of friends from Cape Verde, from Brava.
Right.
So I think there was 12 of us. We would do events.
Yeah.
And we sell tickets. We have bands come in and play. We would raise on average anywhere from 10 to 15 grand. I think we raised a total of $50,000 between the two events we did.
Right.
And then we ship a few containers of products to the hospital in Brava. We fix a few roofs here and there. But it was just like too many people, too many voices, too many decisions. So I decided to go on my own. So I decided I would take... percentage of my net sales for my business and which averaged about 10-15% a year, and I would donate it to a cause that I felt, you know, attached to, and people that I knew needed my help. So I would do that. And then I saw the potential with you. I said, this could be great. All he has to do is make a video and explain to people what I'm doing with Cape Verde.
Right.
And look, we raised what? Almost $85,000 in a little bit over 12 months.
Right. And so for me, I got, when I started doing the charity and it started gaining traction and people actually started to donate, and it was like, we raised $10,000, yeah, we raised $20,000, now we're up to $85,000.
Yeah.
For me, being somebody that I spent most of my adult life disappointing you, right? I spent most of my adult life with
you. I don't
think
you disappointed me.
But let's be real. It was rough for... Maybe you forgot how bad it was, but you used to beg me. You used to come into Volvo's basement and you used to beg me to change my ways, change who I hung out with.
It was scary because I thought you were going to die, literally.
For me, it was kind of like I loved that we could help a lot of people, but at the same time, I got a lot of joy out of the fact that I knew I was finally making you proud, because to me, that was a big deal.
I think I saw it as an opportunity for me and you to get closer.
Yeah.
You know, because I was so close to you growing up. I think up to 10, 11 years old, you were my everything.
Right.
I mean, Lauren is my daughter, which I love Lauren very much. But you were, you know, my firstborn, my son. And then all of a sudden, see you go in that craziness, it was just devastating for me. I couldn't sleep nights. I would always wonder what happened to you. Is he okay? Is he going to... Am I going to get a phone call saying he passed last night or one of those things? So,
right.
Because I see it in my store. Clients that come in tell me about the children and just devastating.
Right.
So.
And so, you know, I'd like to get, you know, kind of step it up with the charity a little bit more and get more involved with it and raise some more money and do a better job of, like, showing the people, like, all right, this is exactly where the money's going. So far... this might be where you get emotional. So far, with the money we've raised and the people we've helped, what's like the most touching story?
First of all, let me just say thank you very much to everyone. I mean, I read some of the notes they drop on the website.
Right.
And, you know, I have this guy from New York, he's a famous pianist. And he donated $500. I mean, it's not the amount of money. I mean, someone gives you $5, but it's the touching words where they say, you know, thank you for helping other people. I mean, I can't thank these people enough. I think we have over 2,500 people have donated already.
Right.
So I can't say enough to these people. It's so wonderful. They're so caring. And we don't really get donations from Portuguese people. We get donations from Americans. We get donations from Australia, donations from London, from England.
Canada. Yeah.
And I can't say enough to these people. They're just so wonderful. I love when they write these notes to us, and I read them. And I wish I could write a note personally to each one of them and say, thank you very much for what you've done for these people.
Right. Well, now you can kind of, through this,
story,
you can tell.
I'll go back to touchy story. Oh, God, how many people? I think I have the lady in Fogo that we built a house for, that one. The kid that we just sent to Dakar, Senegal for treatment, Danny.
Right. He was bedridden.
He was dying.
He was dying. Yeah, and now he'll be fine. He can walk. Yeah. It looks like he gained 100 pounds.
He came back to Cape Verde last week.
Right.
And so I'll see him. I'm going back probably in September, October. I'll go see him.
Right.
This last lady that we, you know, I think we have some videos that we'll show down the road. She has some type of deformity in her leg. She can barely walk.
Mm-hmm.
So she left her home and walked. I think it takes me a good 20 minutes to walk to her house from my house in the island.
Right.
It probably took her about an hour and 15 minutes, hour and a half, to get to my house.
Because
she walks slow. She stops, walks again.
Right.
So she came to my home. I always have people knock on the door sometimes and say, you know, too much, but you can never say no to them. They're just the most wonderful, caring people in the world. You went there, so you know what I'm talking about.
For sure.
So she came in. She says, I heard that you're helping people in the island. I want to know if you can come to my house and see where I live. Mm. So you're not going to make me cry. I'm going to try my best not to cry.
You got the stage.
I remember coming to her house. It was rainy season. It was late September. And I walked into her house. When I walked in, now don't forget, the tile roofs in Cape Verde probably weigh, what, 5 pounds each?
Right.
Those red tiles?
Yeah.
Okay. So if one of those falls on top of your head, you're dead.
Right.
Okay. So she showed me her bedroom where she lived. And the beams, there's no roof, okay, there's no ceiling. Mm. It's literally the beams holding those tiles, okay? And she said, this is where I sleep. So now the rainy season's here right now, so whenever I hear, rumbling, it's going to rain tonight, I go sleep outside. Mm. So outside where? And it's a dirt floor, and she brings a mattress, which is a piece of foam.
Yeah.
That's where she sleeps overnight.
Mm.
And it was just, I think we had just started the charity. And
now how old is this woman?
She's 86.
Oh, okay.
And she lives there with a daughter and son and a grandson.
Mm.
And I said, no matter what, having money or not having money, I will do out of my pocket. I will make sure I change this woman's life.
Right.
And if you see the photos I just sent you, that you couldn't believe it, what was done to her house. So it's taken us on that property about, I think, 8 months, September. Mm. Yeah, eight or 9 months. We've spent about $22,000. We literally left the four walls and built a brand new house for her.
Wow.
So I just went back last week, last month. It was just incredible.
So any house that you build, you're making it look like the house you grew up in, essentially.
Yeah, the goal is we're trying to build as many homes as we can. Mm-hmm. So when you have the same look throughout the island, people start talking about it. We've done one in the island of Santantown. We've done one in the island of Fogo. We've done, I think, about five in the island of Brava.
Mm.
And so there's seven. And so when you build as many as we can, the goal is to build as many as we can.
Right.
And then people start talking. Why does the house look like the one I just saw down the street?
Mm.
And you will get more donations from local people, from local politicians, hopefully, or people that travel to the island, tourists. So that's the goal. So hopefully it will work out.
It's pretty cool. Pretty cool thing we started. And I'm excited to see where it can go. And I know I don't want to beat a dead horse, but, obviously you're aware that, mentally I haven't been doing too hot the last, 6-7 months. And, I've been struggling with depression and stuff like that. And so it has, a direct reflection on the amount of media I put out in the world, because I have been feeling very funny, so it's difficult to make a funny video, and it's difficult to make videos at all feeling the way that I've been feeling. And hopefully I can turn a corner and sort of put this chapter behind me so I can get more involved with the charity and start to make more videos so we can generate more income so we can help more people, because it's been really fun to watch. And I was thinking about this the other day, because
don't forget the charity exists, and also I have a business. So somewhere down the road, if something was to happen to me and all of a sudden you went to my bank account, there's no money there. It's because I donate all the money to the charity.
That's fine.
So I hope you
leave me some, leave me something.
Well, just in case.
You're also going to need a charity for me.
The way I look at life is it's a short passage. I tell you this all the time. That's how I look at it. That's how I feel about it.
Right.
I'm 62 years old. I might have another 20. I might have another 30 years to go.
Mm.
But the greatest thing I can leave you and Lauren is how I lived my life.
Right.
The legacy I leave behind.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to start crying on this one. So if I build 100 homes and I'm gone, and you, Lauren, and Ben travel to Cape Verde, and you see all these homes that I built for these people, I think it's worth more than me leave you $1 million, $2 million.
For sure, for sure. Okay,
so that's how I look at it. So it might be that you'll find $5 in there. It might be you'll find $1 million in there.
Right.
You never. But I think that's the legacy I can leave you. The type of person I was when I lived on this earth, how I treated people, how I was respectful to everybody, how I ran my business,
right,
and how I helped people that are less fortunate than me and you.
Okay, you're talking as if tomorrow's your last day. Hopefully,
it's not last day, but that's the reason why I said to you, I don't think about my hair. I don't think about wearing expensive shoes and expensive clothes and I drive a nice car, but I don't drive a $300,000 Ferrari.
Right.
And because I think that's the way we all should live our lives.
And I was going to say, too, I was thinking about this when I was the other day I was editing the last version of the podcast. And one thing that I was thinking about getting into this field of doing podcasts and doing media and it's something that has never happened in the history of the world. All this technology podcasts. This is new and drop in the bucket compared to all of human history.
Yeah.
And I think back to when I'm gone, right? And I think back to Benjamin, when he gets older, is going to have this archive of all these videos I did. Could you imagine if right now you could go back and your father had done a podcast? And there was hours and hours of content, and he did an interview with you, and you could go back and you could look at it. That's one thing about this whole creative route that I've taken with my life, with even the episodes that I have on Patreon and the episodes that I have on YouTube and all my little funny skits, and is that one day when I turn into dust, Benjamin and Benjamin's kids, they're going to be able to go back, and they're going to be able to say, Ben's going to be able to say, hey, son, let me show you this interview of my dad and his dad doing a podcast. Sure. I think that that's really cool.
I have a video, not a video. I have a tape of my dad. I think I was 7 years old.
Mm.
My dad thought I was a great singer.
Okay.
So he had people over the house. Actually, a friend of his was visiting from Lisbon in the island. My mom made this big meal. All his friends came over for dinner.
Yeah.
And my dad took me up on top of the table and made me sing.
Yeah.
And my dad made the speech. So I have that tape of my dad speaking and me singing.
Mm.
And to me, it's the only thing I have of my dad.
Why haven't I heard this tape?
I'll play for you. Okay. But it's his voice, that's all I have. That short clip, probably a minute long.
Right.
So.
And knowing that.
No videos, nothing.
But like knowing that all you have is this one tape of your dad.
Yeah.
Think about how the world's changing and how everything that I'm doing here is almost like a legacy in a way where Ben will be able to go back and I'll be able to make him laugh. We'll be able
That's
to see
why
my
you gotta get out of this depression bullshit.
Okay.
You have to get out of it. Yeah. Listen, I've been depressed. Listen, I was married to your mom for what, 18 years? I can't remember.
Right.
I think we were married for 18 years.
Yeah.
So I went through a deep depression. I think I was 40 years old when I went through this deep depression that literally I felt. I mean, you were 10. I was 40, 10 years old.
Yeah.
And Lauren, I think, was 6.
Yeah.
And I think you remember, I wasn't myself because it was just like in your marriage has come apart. You have two beautiful children you love. We have a beautiful home. We have a nice life. We travel. I thought we had the American dream. We had everything.
Right.
We live in a beautiful neighborhood. We had it all. And I went through a tough time, depression-wise.
Right.
But I said to myself, I can't go on like this forever. When I lost my dad, I was 21 years old.
Right.
I've been in therapy. I was in therapy from the time my dad passed away, 21, until I was 50 years old.
Right.
But then I said to myself, I need to take care of this myself. Mm. Drugs not going to do it for me. It's got to be me that has to take care of it.
Right.
So when I get into that tunnel where depression starts coming in, I start talking to myself and I say, no, I felt this sad and depressed before. And what happened 24 hours later, 48 hours, it went away.
Right.
So I fight that demon that exists. I know it's there. There's days that it's like, I need to take a nap. I can't deal with all this bullshit that's going on.
Right.
So you have to literally speak to yourself constantly, say, I need to get out of this. And maybe go for a walk, go for a run. Just once the demon starts coming in, you need to open that door, go for a run, go for a walk.
Yeah, I think because it's not as bad as it was a couple of months ago, but it's still not great. And I think that it's almost like I'm a train going down tracks, and I start to do things for myself, and I start to feel a little bit better, and the train starts going down the track, and before I can get any momentum, the train falls off the track.
You have to find different things. One of the things I'm doing, building a new home, right? Mm. So the highlight of my afternoon now is go and see the, you know, what's going on with the house, what was done today, okay? So I go there. I will sit there for an hour and a half, 2 hours sometimes, listen to the birds.
Mm.
I could be sitting somewhere else, depressed, thinking about something else.
Right.
Thinking about what transpired at work. I had this client that returned this $20,000 ring. No. Now I'm going to take it an hour to just listen to birds.
My whole thing is that the term depression is sort of a blanket statement, right? Your depression that you experience is due to circumstances life.
Yeah.
My depression is due to circumstances in my life. So the term is the same, but the factors that led to it are different. So I feel like the solution might look a little different because what I'm dealing with is different where you were depressed, I was depressed, right? But that's just a blanket term. But so much deeper than that where...
You need to get out. You can't. Staying home, looking at the TV or your phone is not going to help you out. You need to go for a walk. Go listen to birds. Do what I do. Find something that you really enjoy. Go sit on the beach and listen to waves. Listen to great music.
No, and I do. I do stuff like that. I don't listen to fucking birds, but I do stuff like that. And like I said, I notice that it makes me feel better. Even if I go to your store, I'm there for 10, 15 minutes. I goof off with you. I goof off with Uncle Chuck. I goof off with Pedro. I feel better when I leave there. Yeah. And then I use that momentum and I go get work done. I go do something and then the momentum comes. And then all of a sudden I might go to sleep feeling motivated. All right, tomorrow I'm going to friggin' do X, Y, and Z. And then I wake up in the morning and it's back.
No. You
have and to. I lost all that momentum. It's,
you have
hey,
to,
hey, listen.
You have to get up and do it.
I've been through worse.
All right.
Okay, it's,
and then it was terrible a month ago, and then it disappeared. That's how you have to look at it.
Yeah, we'll get to it. Maybe I'll go listen to birds. The birds are the key.
Every day at 6:05, 6:10.
Yeah.
Come to the new property. We'll sit there, and it's incredible.
I think that you missed your calling with radio.
Right.
I think because you're doing a great job.
Oh, yeah.
You're not nervous. The conversation's flowing. You sound great.
I haven't cried yet.
You haven't cried. I could, if you really want me to, I could make
you
cry.
What did I cry about last time?
What's so funny is Flick and Josh are probably listening to this.
Yeah.
The amount of times you've mentioned how easily you've cried on every episode.
About?
On every episode we've had so far, I've talked about how easily I cry.
But what did I cry about? It was something I cried about. When I went to visit you down the Cape.
Mm.
I know.
Oh, and I
about.
Did. Oh, I know. We're talking about the guy in Cape Verde that can't move.
Oh,
the guy
that's
bedridden.
The one. That's what, the one.
One picture that's that you sent me of your last trip.
I just saw him last week.
But
last
one
month.
One picture that you sent me.
That one
on your last trip was.
You're gonna bring it up, aren't you?
I'm talking about him right now.
Geez.
But the last picture you sent me.
We don't have a picture of him, do we?
I mean, we.
You have it on your phone, yeah.
I can send it to Josh and he can add it post production. So we'll just pretend that it's up there. So you sent me a picture of you guys got him outside and it looked like he was at in Praça.
Let's change the conversation.
You can't because you'll cry. Okay,
no, it's all right. Go ahead. That's what changes my life. That's where it gives me the strength to be a better person, to fight for these people.
Just I so mean, people know what we're talking about,
yeah.
there's a guy that lives in Brava.
He's in his 40s.
He's in his 40s.
So his
you
mom,
went to visit him for the first time, and you saw him, and you just lost it.
Yeah. So what happened was, the story is, his mom was pregnant with him.
Mm-hmm.
So when his mom found out that he was going to be disabled, she packed her bags and left him in the island with nobody to take care of him. He's a newborn.
Right.
So some lady took over and started taking care of him. So he's now in his 40s. So I heard about him on one of my trips.
And so he can't speak.
Can't speak.
Can't move.
But his mental, his brain functions normal.
Mm.
So when he sees me, he gets so excited. He wants to hug me. And he hugs me so
tight. Can he communicate at all? Like press
no,
a button?
No, nothing.
But isn't there a technology?
Don't forget it's Cape Verde.
It's Cape Verde. But there's... could we raise the money to get him some sort of like a Stephen Hawking wheelchair where he can think thoughts and talk through a thing? Right.
Yes. Probably even more. Yes.
Right.
Because when he sees me, you can see he knows who I am. He wants to say my name, but it doesn't come out. So that's what gets me when I see him. Because I know inside, because it's like you're trapped. You're like inside this prison that you want to get out. His body doesn't work, doesn't function. So when I saw, there was when I was with that group that we were helping the hospital.
Right.
So someone told me about him. So we went to visit him.
Mm-hmm.
So when we walked in, it was just like this body laying in bed.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing. Nothing.
And he's kind of like deformed a little bit. Like he's curled up.
Yeah. So he just laid flat on a foam mattress. Mm. Just laid there. And I said to the woman, I said, how come you guys don't have a pillow for him? At least lift his head up.
Right.
And she says, we don't have a pillow.
Mm.
What do you mean you don't have a pillow? How about a bed? How about a hospital bed? Ooh, they don't have one. So I said, what do you mean you don't? And I said, it has to change.
Right.
There's no way this guy. So I remember there's a picture of him. I'll show you that picture.
Mm-hmm.
When I first got him this first hospital bed,
mm.
and we lift his head up.
Mm.
The smile on his face, it went from this literally dead body to a person.
Mm.
And it just did it for me. It just.
And didn't you guys bring him like an iPod or something like that?
An iPod, so he can music, and you could see the happiness. He's literally moving. It's probably the one person in all of Cape Verde has changed who I am as a person.
Right.
It has given me the strength to do even more for them.
Right.
Because there's so much that needs to be done. The whole archipelago of Cape Verde.
So you must be so important to this guy. Because up until he laid eyes on you, he's just flat, no pillow.
Nobody.
And that had been his life for 40 years.
40 years, yeah.
Where that's it. And then you come along, he probably, because he can hear you and understand what you're saying, so he's probably like, oh, this guy's going to, and then all of a sudden you prop
him
up.
I'll just give
you
an example on this last trip.
Mm.
So there's a big feast in the Island Brava in June, St. John's feast.
Yep.
So they bring him to the town square. They bring all these patients, all these people to at least have a day of enjoyment, listen to music, so on and so forth. And he sees me. He literally wants to get out of his chair. Mm. They have a made-up chair. They wheel him in. They put him in the back of a pickup truck.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they bring him from town. He lives about 20 minutes away. They put this whole chair in the back of a pickup. No seat belts, nothing. He just lays there and they move. Somebody has to hold on to the chair. So he sees me. He gets so excited. And I hugged him. I kissed him. And they're just like, you know, he wouldn't let go.
Right.
And then at the end of the day, I had some money on me. I gave him $100.
Mm.
And he literally grabbed that in my hand. And I thought he had no way of grabbing it. He took it out of my hand.
Mm.
Because he knew that was going to be his supper and his breakfast and his, you know, buying diapers because he wears diapers. He didn't need diapers from.
Mm.
So this guy has really changed me.
So what would it cost to get somebody like that off the island and in a facility that houses people like that, that has nice rooms and nurses and staff.
$100 a month.
To get him in a...
$100 a month.
So why don't we do that?
Somebody take care of him every day. Someone to feed him every day. Someone to change his... $100 a month.
But so he already has that for him now. Somebody that's... But I'm talking about flying him out of Brava.
But you need someone to...
Communicate with them.
If you brought him to the United States, his whole life would change. But you can't bring the whole country in the United States. You know what I'm saying?
Have this one special project where it's like we get him into an assisted living facility, state of the art.
Which is none in Cape Verde.
That's what I'm saying. We get him out of there, state of the art facility, whether it's in Portugal or the United States.
He would be communicating via computer.
Right.
Yeah. He'd be talking to people.
So why don't we set that as a goal?
Well, hopefully somebody listening to this will come up and say, listen, let me call Mr. Varela and tell him I'm going to do this.
Because it's, I mean, so far we've raised $85,000, right? And you get, for every person that you have, obviously he's a very extreme case.
Yeah.
But people that could drastically use help, that don't have a roof over their head, that have medical conditions, that are probably months or a couple of years away from dying, that we could extend their life 20, 30, 40 years if we help them. There's thousands and thousands of people like that in Cape Verde, no?
Hundreds? Yeah, thousands. Yeah. Thousands.
Right.
And the Cape Verdean situation with healthcare is just sad.
It doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist.
Right.
I mean, you could literally, you're on the island. Last month when I was there, a lady came in on the ferry from another island.
Right.
She wasn't feeling well, went to the hospital. Within 2 hours, she's dead.
I think my biggest takeaway from going to Cape Verde, and obviously, like, you kind of telling me these stories, and I can see how it impacts you, and I've always been a softy, and I cry easily. Obviously, I'm your son. You've passed some of that stuff down to me. My biggest takeaway is, and I've talked about this before, is you ever have, like, something in your eye for a long period of time, or you hurt your arm or your leg, and you think about a time where your arm wasn't hurt or your leg wasn't hurt, there wasn't something in your eye, and you say to yourself, I'll never take for granted having two perfectly working eyes ever again. Allergies come around, and your eyes are puffed up, and you're like, oh, I forgot about allergy season. I'll never take not having allergies for granted again. We go about this life that we live in the United States, even when it's bad.
Like, if you're sick here, you go, you know, I go to my
doctor. You go to urgent care.
It's half out.
Right.
I have a friend of mine who's had a stomach issue for 12 years.
Right.
They can't do anything about it.
Right.
He's gone to a doctor. Nothing. There's nothing.
Right.
I got a chance to speak with the doctor at Brigham and Women's in Boston. Mm. He speaks Portuguese. I was able to do a video conferencing with him and the patient.
Right.
So next week, we're going to send him medication. We're writing a letter from my charity, and the doc's going to write a letter for the U.S. Embassy in Praia to get him a visa to come see the doctor here in Massachusetts. Mm. So he's been suffering for 12 years. Finally, on my trip in June, I spoke with him, and he says, he's 43 years old. Mm. So he's been suffering like this since he was 30 years old.
Right.
With something that's minor. The doctor, when he explained to the doctor knew exactly what his problem was. So something we can just take care of with medication.
Right.
So can you imagine, 12 years, there's nothing anybody can do for you.
Right.
That's how much they suffer over there.
What about, do they ever like send a team of doctors over to Brava, and then people come and they try to see what problems they can solve quickly?
Right now there's a group of doctors from Boston, actually from all over the United States.
Right.
So what they do is twice a year, on average, I think 10, 15 doctors go to Praia, is the main island they go to capital, Praia, Santiago. And they do incredible stuff. Mm. You're talking heart surgery, open heart surgery, eye surgery, cancer treatment. So I work with them, so I donate to them. And my goal is to maybe take a percentage of the money that comes in, because they pay their own way. They pay for the tickets. They pay for their stay. They go. It's a vacation. Mm. They take a 2 weeks vacation. They go to Cape Verde to treat people that need treatment. So my goal is to maybe take a percentage. So let's say the $85,000 that came in 1 year, I might take maybe 10% of that, $8,500, maybe 20% of that, and give it to them.
Right.
And maybe travel with them. Maybe pay for all their meals for the 2 weeks they're there.
Could you? So you still have Cape Verdean citizenship?
I have triple citizenship. So I have European.
Cape Verde, Portuguese.
European.
European. Yeah, but so Cape could you, if you wanted to, could you run for president in Cabo Verde?
I think I would get let. Probably I could. But
like legally, could you run?
Of course. Yeah. But it's not my cup of tea.
Right. Politics.
Yeah. Politics not for me. I like what I'm doing. I get so much, you know, you say, you know, they suffering, but I get joy.
Of course.
When I see Danny, the kid Danny.
Yeah.
So Danny was literally dying. Right. Danny's in his 30s. Mm. 20? No, I think Danny's 27 years old. 27 years old. I remember the day I saw that video. And it's in his room made out of cement.
Right, right.
And, you know, the temperature in Cape Verde, it gets friggin' muggy.
Mm.
So we spend with Danny, I think, out of the charity, the money that people gave to us, the $85,000, I think with Danny we spent 16 grand.
Mm.
And we saved Danny's life.
Right.
So what's $16,000 to save someone's life?
It's crazy.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think, but they spend more. They probably spent, Zé Luis Solidar, you met him.
Mm-hmm.
He owns a beautiful charity, does great work. I think total they probably spent close to 35, 40 grand.
And saves his
to
life.
To save a person's life.
Right.
So if you say to somebody, I can give you 40 grand, but you save that person's life. And do it in a minute.
I think what I'd like to, and maybe that's something when I go with you to Cape Verde that we can sort of find a way to highlight it. What I love about Cape Verde so much is, yes, you have these people that don't have a lot, but the way that they operate, the way that they're such a fun group of people, nicest people,
but
great sense of humor. Like they're always sort of ragging on each other and cracking jokes because there's you know, not every household has a TV with cable and Netflix and all there's not like movie theaters and friggin' all these things at every corner. You literally sit around, you eat, you drink, you play music and you tell stories.
So it'd be funny.
That's their entertainment is conversation. So when you have an entire community of people where their biggest form of entertainment is each other, you over time, you develop a community with an incredible sense of humor. Where it's just, and that's why I wish I understood the language more, but even understanding the language as much as I can, I can speak better than my sister who went to Harvard. Gocina.
Yes.
Off camera.
Yeah, you spoke well when you were younger.
I spoke well when I was younger because I was Vovo was our babysitter.
My mother.
Your mom was our babysitter.
Vovo, nobody understands what you're talking about.
Most people can figure that out. And then I get older and there's no need for a babysitter. I'm not at Vovo's as much. But then when I moved to Brockton and I started hanging around with Cape Verdean kids, I started to pick it up a little bit again as I got older.
Well, maybe we should do a live from Cape Verde. I'm saying, I think that's we should do a trip and pick one of these islands and go. You really want to see poverty. There's some of the places like Sal. You see these shanty homes that are just like,
I've seen it.
Cardboard boxes.
So you got to understand, you grew up there and then
But in Bravo, you don't see poverty as much as you see in some of these other
islands. But what I'm saying is you grew up there.
Yeah.
And then you started to go back. And then you started to go back very frequently.
Yeah.
Where you would go sometimes twice in a year, three times in a year. When I went for the first time, I was 20 years old. That was the first time I had gone.
And I remember you guys, since you were kids, I would always talk about this place.
Right.
So you guys
told
have
the story. Yeah. I told the story for the Patreon version last week about when my friend felt the story about how you said, don't go anywhere and pry without me.
Geez.
And then you let me go on. I didn't get crazy with the details, but I did say
I was single, you know.
Yeah,
so
no, there's nothing wrong with
it. Flight attendant, you know, had the hots for me. What am I going to do? She was attractive.
No, but my biggest thing is you were like, whatever you do, don't go out and pry it by yourself. And then you schmooze the flight attendant. And now you're like,
she sold me on the idea you're going to be fine.
See, it was a very memorable time. Yeah, and it was a beautiful moment that I shared with those guys.
If I was to go there again, I would say don't go. Because pry is not a place you want to just get out and go into a concert.
With thousands of people. Yeah. And I'm the only white person in a sea of people. But I had I got a lot of looks. A lot of funny looks.
Well, you with
I was with three
the ladies'
locals.
Friend, the ladies' kids,
cousin or something like that. And they protected me. You could tell how excited they were to bring me with them.
Yeah.
And we even got in the VIP section. I could speak enough Creole and they could.
So what'd you say to them, like in Creole?
Well, it was more just communication through energy of like vibes of smiling and dancing and the joy they got out of bringing me. Like I remember they had the armed security guarding the VIP tent with free food, free drinks close to the stage.
And so you got in there?
They're arguing with the guy. Guy's holding a machine gun. They're arguing with the guy. Like, look, he's American. Let us in the VIP. We're trying to show him a good time. And they let us in. And they were pumped because it's free food, free beer. You're right on the stage. We had a freaking blast.
Let's keep right now. The people are just incredible. I love them. They're the nicest people in the world. That's, you know.
I remember when I went, I must have brought like four or five pairs of shoes and I came back with one.
Oh, I remember the day we went to that town.
I gave away shoes.
And you came home with no shoes.
Yeah.
You gave to the girl.
Yeah.
You gave her your own shoes.
Yeah. Somebody would comment like, oh, look at those. I like your shoes. And I take them right off my feet and give it to them.
Yeah. So we can do a lot more. It just takes time. It just takes money.
Right.
You know, it's a long trip. It takes me almost 72 hours to get to my island.
Right.
From Boston. So
yeah.
It's three flights and one ferry. So
right.
It's a long trip.
Yeah. And that's why it kind of makes traveling there a little bit cooler. Because if you can just hop on a plane, you're there in 3 hours. Like, it's always cool to go to new places and experience different cultures and stuff like that.
You know what's weird, though? I've been there 34 times
mm-hmm.
since I started going.
Yeah.
Every time I go, I get the same excitement.
Okay, as you should.
It's like, you know, I just came back in June. I can't wait to go back in.
Right.
Because and when I come back, for the first few days, I'm so done with that place.
Right.
But it's a month later, I'm ready to go again. So,
yeah. Great so place. I'm excited about the stuff we're doing. Josh, where are we at for time?
Perfect. Hour and five.
All right. So we'll cut this little part out and then I'll. Well, Dad, appreciated having you on.
Thank you. It was
again,
a pleasure. I want to thank you. Have the limits. I can't thank these people enough because without them, it would be impossible to do what we're doing. And we're changing lives. We're making these people. I mean, the happiness you see is just, I mean, how do you go to that lady's house and you go from four walls, ceiling cave on top of her head to a brand new house, new bathroom, new kitchen, new bedrooms. It's just incredible. Mm-hmm. So I can't thank them enough. Thank you very much. And thank you for helping me out.
I appreciate it. And hopefully as my thing continues to grow, so does the charity, and we can, you know, do more.
Now your thing continues to grow. Your podcast. Please.
Obviously, I'm not talking about my penis. What do you mean?
God,
we did so good this whole episode.
No, but think about it. You have to think about it before you speak. You have to think about it.
Okay, so I'll try it again.
Please.
Hopefully, my channels continue to grow.
That's better.
So. More eyes can get on my videos when I talk
your
about the charity.
Your sister is a Harvard graduate.
Yeah.
So you got to kind of get a little of that
how
Harvard
much
in
has
there.
She raised for people in other
Zero.
Countries?
Zero.
Lauren, step your game up. All right. Thanks, everyone.